Gentlemen, I'll ask the Director of Corporate Services, the Acting CEO or Presiding Member, not Presiding Member, Acting CEO here tonight to read the prayer. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Almighty God, under whose providence we hold responsibility for this city, grant us wisdom to understand its present needs, foresight to anticipate its future growth, and grace to serve our fellow citizens with integrity and selfless devotion. And to thee be all blessing and glory forever. Amen.
Thank you. I'll now say the acknowledgement for country. I respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, the Whadjuk Noongar people of Western Australia, and pay my respects to elders past and present. Excuse me. It is a privilege to be standing on Whadjuk Noongar country. I now formally declare this meeting open of the Council of the City of Perth. Apologies. Are there any apologies?
There are apologies from the Chief Executive Officer and the Director, Community and Commercial Services for tonight's meeting.
Thank you. Question time for the public. Are there any questions?
Yes, we do have some questions. So firstly, there was a question received from Miss Anna Vanderbom at the council meeting held on 26th of June 2018. That question was responded to in writing and will be included in the minutes of this council meeting. We also have received some questions from Mrs. Anne Bontempo of the King Street Precinct in relation to items 13.5 and 13.11 on tonight's agenda. I'm not sure if Mrs. Bontempo is in the audience. If she's not here, I'm happy to read out her questions. So if she's not here, I'll read her questions for the purpose of people in attendance here. Question one relates to item 13.5, the change to parking fees at Point Fraser Car Park. It states the city is mindful of the impact of a dropping parking cost would have on revenue for the city's budget. And there are three questions asked. A, what is the city doing to structurally alter its budget each year to reduce its reliance on parking fees as a source of revenue? B, if the decision is made to reduce parking fees at this location to ease the burden, will the city consider doing so across the whole of the local government area? And C, does the city believe its current approach to parking is sustainable from both a budget-setting perspective and from the perspective of retailers and ratepayers? The city's response in relation to those questions is as follows. So, in relation to A, parking continues to be an important source of earnings for the City of Perth, as it contributes to approximately 35% of the overall revenue of the city. The revenue earned is used to help and support various activities such as city maintenance, capital works, community services and community events that benefit the public and businesses within the city. In addition to this, approximately $17.8 million of the parking revenue is paid by the city under state government legislation as a CBD-specific parking levy or tax to allow the city to provide important parking to the public and businesses. The city, on an ongoing basis, continues to review and optimise its operations to minimise the required revenue needed from rates and parking and to ensure the delivery of the city's services to the public and businesses. In response to question B, the City of Perth is continually reviewing, monitoring and performing analysis on all parking within the city to strike the right balance of equal public access, price and its responsibilities to the ratepayers of the City of Perth. As a result of this continuous review, the decision was made to adjust parking fees at Point Fraser. And our response to question C was the City of Perth believes its current approach of continually reviewing parking across the city to strike the right balance for public and business access is sustainable. It is intended to balance the required earnings from parking to provide support for community services, maintenance and capital works within the city, whilst providing accessible parking to the public, despite absorbing the parking levy imposed by the state government. Question two from Mrs. Bontempo relates to item 13.11 on the agenda, the outdoor dining policy and guidelines. The question two is in two parts. Part A, did the City of Perth engage any external consultants to complete any work attached to this agenda? And part B, if so, which consultancy was engaged and how much was spent? The response to the question was the City can confirm that all works were undertaken by City staff and that consultants were not used. Question three relates to item 13.11, outdoor dining and policy and guidelines. Please respond to the following questions regarding specific policy sections. Policy section 2.2C, given consideration of granting a licence depends on an alfresco dining setup not impeding view of traffic or line of sight of pedestrians crossing a road, would not have had the alfresco closer to the road rather than against the structure of the building increase this likelihood? Policy section 2.2D, how does the city decide on what is considered acceptable furniture? Policy section 2.2F, how does the city determine a location's amenity and how alfresco dining will either add or detract from before a licence is granted? Policy section 2.2J, what could fall into this category of any other matters that the City of Perth considers to be relevant? Policy section 3.1, subsection 1, the alfresco dining area should be located directly adjacent to the eating house, is contradicted by sections 3.12, 3.13 and 3.14. Policy section 13.2, subsection 2, the alfresco dining area must be located adjacent to the curb with a minimum curb clearance of 600 millimetres. It would be safer for the pedestrians and customers to first encourage alfresco areas to be located directly adjacent to the building, not the road. No matter the buffer distance you impose, it is far more attractive to open up the footpath for pedestrians on the side closest to the road while leaving space available for alfresco closest to the building. Policy section 4.3, subsection 3. In King Street, the provision of modern sympathetic designs are preferable to period designs that are not authentic to the precinct, is on the whole contrary to the language used in the King Street Heritage Precinct Design Guidelines, Supplementary Notes Alfresco Dining, in brackets page 25, which states as follows, the design of tables, chairs and benches and any applied advertising should be in keeping with the style and character of the host building and reflect the interior image of the eating place. This is a heritage precinct and an old commercial area. All furniture should reflect this. Metal, wood and textiles, including canvas, are seen as appropriate materials. Moulded plastics and acrylics are not appropriate. Colours used on alfresco furniture should complement the overall yellow tones of the streetscape. Pure white is to be avoided on tabletops where its glare can be unpleasant. outdoor dining guidelines, it states on page 13 that outdoor dining is most appropriate in amongst other locations, laneways. Can the city please explain the relationship between a laneway, which is open to vehicle traffic, and establishing al fresco dining when the previous point on this page deals the need to have a minimum 3.2 metres combined footpath and curb width? Now, in response to all those questions, I can advise that the outdoor dining policy and guidelines are being considered by council for public consultation purposes only, the matter being on tonight's agenda. As such, the city will be seeking feedback from all stakeholders about them prior to the council considering them for adoption. The matters raised in sections 2 to 4 will be considered by the city as part of this consultation process. This letter will be included as a submission on the draft policy and guidelines. It is anticipated that improvements to the policy and guidelines will be made in response to the feedback received from all stakeholders. Thanks, Chair. We've also received a question from Mr. Brett Fleeton. I'm not sure if Mr. Fleeton's in the audience. Okay. Did you want to read out the questions, or are you happy for me to read out the questions? Okay. So we've received a question from Brent Fleeton, which I'll read for the benefit of the audience. Question one, according to the city's budget, at the end of the 2018-19 financial year, it will hold $21.9 million in the parking levy reserve and $20.4 million in the parking facilities development reserve. The questions are, A, what is the percentage increase of $822,000 in the parking levy reserve from last year? Question B, does this total reserve balance transfer to the state government each year to pay the levy, or is this a buffer the city keeps? And question C, what is the plan for the $20.4 million in the reserve for parking facilities development? We'll take that question on notice, Mr. Fleeton, and provide a response in time for the next meeting. Question two relates to on page 64 of the agenda under the parking report by Deloitte. It states the revenue raised through the licensing of parking bays is used to fund the Central Area Transit bus system, improving public transport access, enhancing the pedestrian environment, supporting bicycle access, and other initiatives which support a balanced transport system. The questions relate to A, how does the city reconcile parking revenue as stated in this report with the expenditure listed in the 2018/19 budget? Question B, what amount can be attributable to the capital expenditure on new projects which fit the above mentioned scope? Question C, what amount goes towards the maintenance of existing infrastructure in this scope? And question D, what amount goes to other projects not listed above, including salaries? As previously advised, we'll also take this question on notice and a detailed response will be provided. Question three relates to what are the patronage numbers for the CAP bus system for the past five financial years? That question also will be taken on notice and will be provided at a later date. And the final question relates to, for the past five financial years, how much has been spent each year on the CAP bus system, but both in terms of capital expenditure and operating expenditure? And the response is the same. We'll need to take that question on notice as well, and a detailed response will be provided later. Now, we've also received, Chair, another a piece of correspondence, and I'm not sure, from a Mr. Tony Ranson. I'm not sure if Mr. Ranson's in the audience. If he's not in the audience, we could probably table that item as an item of correspondence rather than table it as a question. So we'll pick that up under correspondence.
Well, if it's correspondence and it's not a question, then it should be tabled as correspondence.
That's what I think it is, yeah.
Okay. Good. So the Commissioner's happy with that approach? Oh, it is, okay. Okay, good. So we'll take that as... So thank you. Are there any further questions from the floor? If not, are there any deputations?
No deputations that I'm aware of, Chair.
Any deputations? No, thank you. Move to any members wanting leave of absence or applications for leave of absence. Any members from commissioners? Are you considering your verdict, Commissioner Hammond, or...?
No.
No, okay, good, just checking.
I'm not aware of any.
Thank you. Okay, so the answer is nil. Now move to confirmation of the minutes of the... firstly, the agenda briefing session held on 24th July 2018, and also the council meeting held on the 26th of June, and the special council meeting held on the 3rd of July 2018. Now, as there's three sets of minutes there, is there any corrections to any of the minutes? If not, could someone then move endorsement of all those three minutes, set of minutes? Thank you, Commissioner Hammond. Seconded. I have no objection, so declare those minutes confirmed as a true and correct record. Announcement by the Chair of the Commissioners. I just want to make one point on policy. bearing in mind there's a number of policies to be going up for public comment. And notwithstanding the formal adoption of policy and guidelines, the law, legal ruling is any policy still has to be considered on its application on its merits. So any application which may or may not conform with policy still has to be considered. It cannot be automatically discounted. That is a ruling from past Chief Justice David Malcolm. And so a policy is a policy. It's not a hard and fast statute of yes or no. So I welcome the input from people, but doesn't mean that formal adoption of policy would result in any application in the future, regardless of the format of the policy, would be automatically discounted just because it didn't necessarily comply with policy. It has to be evaluated accordingly, just for interest of the public. So... that's the only announcement, if you can call it that. Any disclosure of members' interests? I understand there's a disclosure from Mr. Mark Ridgewell, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Impartiality interest. Just so it's aware, because he fortunately has a close friend of Channel 9 and Perth Managing Director. So the concern of mine has removed all matters related from considering of the tender, so we'll note that. Thank you, Mr. Ridgewell. Now move to questions by members of which due notice has been given. Are there any questions of which due notice has been given?
No, Chair.
Okay. And apart from the correspondence you have already mentioned, has any other correspondence?
No, Chair. We only have that piece of correspondence from Mr. Ranson.
Right. Thank you. And I also understand that we have no petitions been received to date. Is that correct?
No, Chair.
Thank you. In that case, are there any matters for which the meeting can be closed? I understand there's a number of matters.
Yes, Chair, Commissioner. In accordance with Section 5.23, Subsection 2 of the Local Government Act, should a commissioner wish to discuss the content of the confidential attachments in relation to items 13.5, 13.9 and 13.12, it is recommended that the council resolve to close the meeting to the public prior to discussion on those items.
Thank you. So on that basis, we'll now move to the agenda proper, and my understanding is that, subject to any corrections from commissioners, that apart from the following items, which will be considered separately, the officer's recommendations for the remaining items will be adopted by council en bloc by an absolute majority decision. The first is item 13.1 relating to East Parade Kensington Street signalised intersection upgrade. So that's 13.2, modernising planning, Australia's planning system. 13.4 is to be withdrawn, which is business plan, City of Perth parking, major trading undertaking. 13.5 relating to change of parking fees at Point Fraser car park. 13.6, financial statements and financial activity statement for the period ended 31 of May 2018. And 13.9, which is tender provision of the promotion and broadcast of a TV station, Australia Day Long Weekend. And 13.11, outdoor dining policy and guidelines. And 13.13, amendment to council policy 10.6, elected members. And reimbursement of expenses in council policy 10.3, elected members relating to interstate and overseas travel expenses. So they are the exception of items which were considered separately. Could I have someone move that the balance of the agenda be endorsed? Commissioner McMahon?
Second.
No dissent, so that's accordingly. We'll now move to the relevant items. The first one is item 13.1, which requires an absolute majority of East Parade and Kensington Street signalised intersection upgrade. Is this a commissioner prepared to move the recommendation? Councillor Hamm? Is there any discussion on this matter? If not, there's no dissent to the recommendation, to declare it endorsed accordingly. Now move to item 13.2, modernising West Australia's planning system. I have given Mr. Ridgewell on my right a number of refinements, as I'll call it, to the paper, and their commissioners in the gallery's indulgence. I have a number of points which I'll go through as briefly as possible. I want to I'll be basically moving the recommendations subject to these amendments, but I want to make it clear that from my perspective, the planning system of the state of Western Australia is a system which involves both local government and state government. They are not separate entities. The state government sets the clear strategic direction through the Metropolitan Region Scheme and other relevant state planning policies and policy statements, and then councils through the delegations based on the recommendation of the Commission to the Minister for Planning receives an endorsed local planning scheme on the basis that that scheme, unless approved otherwise, is in alignment with the state government policies and strategies. So unfortunately there seems to be and this goes back to the original development system, which basically was the state sets the broad framework and the council set the detail within that framework in accordance with those broad state frameworks, unless there's a discretionary or a change which is recommended by the Commission to the Minister and the Minister subsequently agrees. So councils do not have a local planning scheme unless it is agreed by the state government. So having said that, I strongly endorse the modernisation of West Australia's planning system, and let me say I was very impressed with the report given to commissioners. In terms of, as I said, I'm moving to amend the responses to the City of Perth submission to the West Australian Planning System Green Paper Concepts as follows. In respect of Proposal 2.41, which is required that a local planning scheme be published with inclusion of local planning strategy in the form of a local strategic statement and local planning policies in a document to be called a comprehensive planning scheme, local planning scheme, I believe the Commission's response should be as follows. Support the concept of local planning policy has been included in the local planning scheme to ensure strategic alignment between a proposed planning strategy and supporting planning policies. Local government provisions should be required for local planning policies to be approved by WPFC in the event of a conflict with state government policies to ensure strategic alignment of outcomes are not eroded. Next one is Proposal 6.1. The local planning scheme regulations be amended to provide that local planning policies are to be prepared in a manner and form approved by WAPC. Commission's response is support the proposal, but subject that a submission to WAPC for approval of local planning policies be only required if the policy is contrary to state policies, as this would not result in any significant resource implications for state government. In any event, a local government policy should be discussed in the first instance with an officer from the Department of Planning, Heritage, etc. I should know that off by heart, to ascertain if there's any potential conflict. Proposal 2.73, which is providing that local planning scheme regulations that are deemed provisions which set out standardised zones, land uses and land use permissibility. Commission response should be, whilst the intent is understood, this proposal needs to be discussed in more detail with local government, in particular the City of Perth planning officers. Proposal 3.24, make provision with the local planning scheme regulations that local planning strategy must be in accordance with strategic community strategic plan under Local Government Act to the extent that it is relevant. And I believe that in terms of the response given by staff, that's fine, but we should add the words to the last sentence. However, if it is accepted from a whole-of-government approach that the Council's strategic community plan could be in conflict with state government objectives, this would not be beneficial in ensuring alignment with local and state government functions and associated desired outcomes, for example, the City of Perth Act 2016. In other words, it's important to speak in conflict if you want to achieve the similar objectives. Proposal 4.1.2, provide for a local government accreditation process. I believe the Commission's response should be as follows. The response be amended to support the introduction of a local government accreditation system being introduced to ensure local governments have effective planning advice and processes in place, as the state planning system involves both state and local government, as I mentioned earlier. The accreditation process should contain the following. A. The local government has an up-to-date planning scheme and policies which are to be subject to regular reviews as per legislation. B. The local government has access to appropriate qualified advisers, that is, appropriate planning officers, local government consultants, and many don't in the state. C. Local government elected members are required to have compulsory training in planning law, something I'm very strong on, and I note that West Australian Local Government Association recently endorsed. And D, that the accreditation processes promote effective decision-making by local government and facilitate increased delegation to local government officers. This recommendation recognises that the state planning system requires effective integration between state government legislation and associated delegated legislation to local government, e.g. the local planning scheme. Proposal 4.1.4 is provided for the Planning and Development Act to be amended to revise the membership of WAPC. Commission's response. Support the proposal in full, as input from the CEO of key government agencies can continue through advice, but removal of the CEOs from formally voting on the Commission will ensure that no conflict of interest occurs between the individual's departmental responsibilities and determining the matter from a whole-of-government perspective, which is the Commission's role. It would be like having, with due respect, a planner sitting on this round this table voting on their own reports. So that's something I'm quite strong on, and actually has been supported in my past role by appropriate advice. Proposal 4.2.10, provide for development contribution plan costs and cost contribution schedules to be included as a schedule in local planning schemes. Suggesting Commission's response be as follows. Support the proposal, as significant concern has been raised in the past due to the ongoing increase in development contribution costs without detailed justification from the local government sector. I'm sorry that has occurred, but it is of concern to the Commission. Local government costs should be transparent, open, and be able to be subjected to scrutiny and justification. And I think that's something which, whilst the City of Perth and others may do it very well, there's some issues being raised in the broader context in other local governments. Two more to go. Proposal 5.3.1, the WAPC to assist with land use and infrastructure coordination for delivery of priority precincts through a renewed committee. The Commission's response is suggested as follows. Support the proposal in part, as outlined in the first paragraph of the staff response, but add the following. The formation of an appropriate qualified committee or specific infrastructure coordinated committee with clear terms of reference is essential, as infrastructure planning cannot be separated from land use planning functions. The proposed committee must have the ability to advise Infrastructure WA, which will assess major infrastructure proposals rather than being involved in detailed land use planning and infrastructure coordination at a local level. In terms of additional proposal sections under local government fees, the Commission's response is that the proposal of the staff be supported, subject to the following words being added, on the basis of a fee for service and relevant costs being substantiated. In other words, local government should just not simply make up a fee without being able to substantiate the fee for service. That's a principle, I think, which is self-explanatory. So, and that's it. Good. So, any questions of my... I've tried to outline that. Well, I'm moving formally those the staff's report, subject to those amendments that I've read, be endorsed accordingly.
Need a seconder on.
Yeah, well, that's Councillor Hammond. Okay, any dissent? Endorsed, thank you. Now move to item 13.4, which is... business plan for City of Perth parking, major trading undertaking. Mr. Commissioner Hammond.
Thank you, Commissioner Lumsden. I'd like to move an alternative motion, and being that this document not be endorsed in its current form, so as a more comprehensive business plan can be developed that addresses all aspects of the City of Perth parking business, including but not limited to the current and future net financial impacts on the city, strategic and operational risks, and the application of competitive neutrality principles.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Can you speak to the motion, please?
Thank you, Commissioner. Look, I think there has been some very good work done with the major trading undertaking business plan that has been submitted. However, in light of the new and more focused effort in strategic planning with the city and the acknowledgement of an urgent need for the corporate business plan, I think it's also important to ensure that such a significant driver of the revenue for the city is also covered by a comprehensive business plan that not only complies with the Act but is able to inform commissioners and also advise the community of the very important role parking plays in providing revenue for the city.
Thank you. Any other comment from the Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to support that recommendation. I think that there's, as shown by the questions that were tabled today, a great deal of interest in the parking business of the city and its strategic importance to the city and its ratepayers.
Thank you, Commissioner McMath. Yes, look, I agree with the comments made by both commissioners. It has been stressed on the commissioners that the parking revenue is a key strategic issue for the city in terms of its revenue. It is also an issue which I think everybody is well aware of, is that notwithstanding that parking revenue is an important revenue source for the city, that equally, how parking is managed and administered, particularly in hard economic times, can have an impact on businesses, and that we need to look at this in a very strategic manner. If our parking revenue decreases, through whatever reason, then obviously there needs to be, I'll call it a strategic response on how we accommodate that without reducing other levels of services. I also would make the point that parking revenue is not only important from how the city administers its services to its ratepayers, but equally it has an important impact on how it is applied and is seen not only by the general public, but equally other important stakeholders such as businesses in the city who also pay rates and, of course, their tenants. So that's why I support the proposal. Is there any further discussion on the matter? Do you want to have any closing debate, Commissioner Hammond?
No, thank you, Chair.
Okay, if that's the case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? None against? Declare the motion endorsed. Now move to the next item, which is 13.3. Yes, thank you, Mark. 13.5, change of parking fees at Point Fraser Car Park. Thank you. Yes.
Before we go on, we should just note the slight change, the administrative correction to the papers that are on the public agenda. So page 76 of the report on the public agenda needs to be corrected at the top of page 76 there to refer to a price adjustment to rates to reflect the dollar value from $1 in the paper to $3. So there was a mistake made basically in the production of the papers. So if commissioners could note that prior to any discussion.
Thank you. I think we've all been advised of that amendment through email. I take it commissioners are across that. Okay. So on that item, did I have a mover? Or
one?
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Okay, before I put the motion, do you want to make any comment on the matter?
Thank you.
I certainly would. I think the the whole issue of parking, and we've already discussed commercial parking, but on-street parking, the impacts that this type of parking is having on local business is something that the city should be well aware of, and I look forward to the outcomes of the precinct-based parking strategy that we have commissioned to give us some more information on how best we can deal with this. What I believe is a real issue for the City of Perth is that our competitors and the competitors of our businesses are the adjoining local government areas, such as the town of Victoria Park with the Albany Highway Strip, Oxford Street in Leaderville, we have Subiaco, etc., etc. So it's important that the city takes a competitive stance with its parking so as our businesses have the best opportunity in what are significantly difficult times.
Thank you, Commissioner Howard.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Max, do you want to add anything? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In the last week, I happened to be in the city of Subiaco, and they have a parking regime in some of their car parks where the first hour is free. And I noticed in paying my due, as I was staying beyond 1 hour, that there was also an advertisement on the signs that on the weekends there would be free parking. Now, I haven't been able to ascertain whether that was a council policy or whether it was an over-exuberant tenant or property owner, but the message it sent to me was the need for us to be very responsive to our economic times and to be flexible, and as Commissioner Hammond said, to take a precinct by precinct basis in response to the demands on our ratepayers and in order to attract visitors to come to the CBD as well as stay in the CBD. This all needs to be done in the context of the overall budgetary constraints and our broader remit, but I encourage the work that's been initiated to be completed as quickly as possible so that we're able to be as responsive as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner McMath. I'd speak to this matter as well. I fully support the recommendation, the motion moved by Councillor Commissioner Hammond, but I would just want to make now a couple of points. First of all, I thank the staff for the report, and it's probably come to the Commissioners since their appointment that whilst it is acknowledged and respected that the previous Council did have a broad policy that car parking functions should be covered by fees, that is probably a reasonable policy in perhaps more reasonable times. Having said that, I'd also qualify that comment I just made. Bearing in mind that various different sites, for example, Point Fraser, across the city, whether they're in East Perth, Subiaco, the CBD, or elsewhere, I believe having a broad-based policy, which is what I'd call a one-size-fits-all approach, is no longer appropriate. Policies need to be fit for purpose, and they need to be interpreted and applied in such a way. Now, very clearly, Point Fraser Car Park is not a CBD site, and it's totally different to other sites in East Perth. Therefore, having taken on board what previous comments were made at the beginning of this meeting, but equally what Commissioner McMath has put quite succinctly, is that we as commissioners have cast our mind to see how we can approach these issues, address immediate concerns, but we are very conscious that any decrease in parking revenue needs to be re-looked at in a broader context. That does not mean raising rates. It means that recasting and having a very stronger strategic financial approach, not only now but in the future, on how the city meets its tasks. And particularly if you put, I'll call it a mute point, approach to parking fees, notwithstanding the state government's levy, which is obviously a constraint, and notwithstanding its good intent behind the state government's levy policy objectives, but equally the issue where we're trying to activate the city, encourage people coming in, but also balance that we don't want the city choked with cars. This really requires a broader corporate strategic approach rather than having very rigid policy approach to any site within the city. So that's been our approach and something we've got to work on. We've discussed this with administration, and it's something that's one of the reasons why I think touched on earlier why the commissioners are very keen to move to a more strategic corporate approach, both from the city's focus, not only from a local government act perspective but equally from the City of Perth Act perspective, but also having regard for the financial sustainability of the city in the future. So that requires further discussion, but it's not good enough to address these immediate issues just simply because you have a policy which says it'll be cost expenditure neutral. So that's why I support process. So I put the motion. All those in favour? Endorsed. Now we move to next item, which is 13.6. I understand, is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you. Commissioner McMath, I believe.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to make an amendment to the recommendation as follows. The Council receives the financial statements and the financial activity statement for the period ended 31st of May 2018, as detailed in Attachment 13.6A of this report. The City reviewed the process for closing out and accounting for capital projects as soon as they are completed, rather than waiting for the end of the financial year.
Do I have a second to that? Thank you. Commissioner McMath, could you please speak to that to explain the intent?
Thank you, Chair. I'd refer the commissioners to page 92, which is the statement of cash flows for the 11 months ended 31st of May 2018. And in particular, the cash flows from investing activities under payments, which show a substantial variation of budgeted to year-to-date actuals against purchased land and buildings, purchased infrastructure assets, purchased plant and mobile equipment, purchased office furniture and equipment, and work in progress. As you will see from the year-to-date variations, there are substantial variations across each of those line items. On inquiry, this was found to be a result of the deferral of the city closing out in a timely way the capital projects that are completed during the period that we're accounting for and completing this at the end of the period. I believe in the interests of a more transparent and accurate regular revisions to our annual accounts on a monthly basis, it would be appropriate for the city to review its policies of closing out projects and accounting for them as they occur through the year.
Thank you, Commissioner McMath. Any comment, Commissioner Hammond?
No, I have no
comment other than endorse the intent of the motion. Is there all those in favour of the motion? Endorsed accordingly, unanimous. Next item is item 13.7, I understand.
No,
13.9. 13.9, thank you. Okay, and 13.9, yes, acting CEO.
Just to advise, 13.9 has actually been withdrawn from the agenda. There is a little bit more work required, and that'll be brought forward to the next council meeting.
Okay, well, just for the minutes, can the commissioners move a motion that be noted? No. Commissioner McMahon seconded of no dissent and acknowledge the extra work that needs to be done. Thank you, Mr. Acting CEO. We now move to the next item, which is
1311.
Thank you. Outdoor dining policy and guidelines. This is where we had a number of questions. Just again remind that this policy is being put forward to go out for public comment. Over to commissioners. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move an amended motion as follows. One, endorses the draft council policy 14.1 outdoor dining policy as detailed in attachment 13.11b for consultation purposes. Two, notes that a review of the outdoor dining policy will be undertaken after the first year and then updated every 3 years. Three, endorses the draft outdoor dining guidelines bracket as detailed in attachment 13.11c bracket for consultation purposes. Four, notes that the result of the consultation of the outdoor dining policy and guidelines will be presented to council at a future meeting as soon as is possible. Five, reviews the proposed fee structure endorsed by council on the 21st of November 2017, item 1.1, which read, endorsed, quote, the implementation of an annual al fresco dining fee of $40 per square metre from the 1st of January 2018, as detailed in this report, close of quotation. To ensure that the City of Perth fee structure be competitive with other Perth local government fee structures. Six, the City investigates the development of an online self-service function to facilitate the efficient and effective processing and management of applications. And seven, following the consultation process, a revised policy and guidelines will be presented to Council for approval as soon as possible and no later than December 2018. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Seconded by Commissioner Hammond. Would we wish to speak to that? Commissioner McMath, please.
Thank you, Chair. The reason behind this motion is firstly to identify the enormous amount of work that's already gone into this process and to support the consultation process going forward. However, in the spirit of delivering outcomes within the city for the benefit of the activation through the outdoor dining policy and outlines, I'm keen to see that this be handled in a very timely manner and hopefully allow for the activation of the city dining places as soon as possible and hopefully for this upcoming summer period. The reason behind the request for a review of the proposed fee structure with respect to other councils is I understand that a great deal of consideration has been given to this item as well, and getting a balance with respect to the recovery of the costs of implementing the policy, and also the comparison with other capital city local governments such as Melbourne and Sydney and what have you. However, as far as the CBD is concerned, I believe we should be competitive with other local governments here in Perth, again to encourage people to come into the city, to maybe stop longer by virtue of having a good al fresco impromptu dining, to stay longer in our car parks if they've driven, and to go into our shops and enjoy the activities apart from retail that the city has to offer. So I'd ask for that fee structure to be reviewed in the context of the overall response. And then the other item is with respect to the online self-service function. I think the more the city can do to be efficient, driven through technology improvements and enabling people to make efficient applications mean that we can divert resources to other duties and responsibilities that we have with respect to this function. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other comments?
No.
Well, I have a comment. I endorse Commissioner McMath saying, I don't mind comparisons with other local governments as long as they are relevant. The issue we're talking about here in terms of an outdoor dining policy is looking at, again, a site-specific. With due respect, comparison with other capital cities, bearing in mind their makeup as I do, is of no relevance in terms of policy. You might get some guidance from comparison policy, but as Commissioner McMath outlined, I think the issue is here is that, again, if we look at the City of Perth Act, we looked at the activation of the city having regard for the strategic impacts which are occurring within the city, but also what is causing them beyond the city. And with due respect, people of the public, and I'll include myself, I don't really give a damn where local government boundary is. It's like saying an environmental issue or the Swan River stops at our boundary. It clearly does not. It's like saying that transport issues stop at our boundary. And whilst we might have congestion in the city, how the broad transport system works is of no relevance, and clearly it does. So the relevance is, what is the economic activity not only happening within the city, but also surrounding the city, particularly when we are, in relative terms to other cities, a small capital city, certainly nowhere near the City of Brisbane, or for that matter, the City of Melbourne. So when we do comparatives, they have to be relevant so that they inform the policy effectively so that we can make appropriate strategic decisions. And I think, without mentioning other local governments specifically, I think there are clearly examples in the Perth metropolitan area where local governments have positioned themselves to be more competitive and encourage people to come into their centres compared to other cities because they recognise that we are competing for a disposable dollar from Mr and Mrs Public which is not simply divvied up in like 40% to City of Perth, 20% to City of so-and-so. So that's why I support the approach. Thank you, Commissioner McMath. I put the motion. Is there any objection to the motion? Thank you. That's endorsed accordingly. Thank you. The next item is 13-13. Thank you, Mr. Ridgewine. Guiding me through the paths of righteousness here. Council policy, elected members' expenses, etc. Do I have any... Thank you, Commissioner Hammond.
Sorry, Commissioner, could I just have... Oh, the microphone's just been turned on. Thank you.
Sorry, to identify the... Sorry, for the record, you've... Yeah. Let's start again. I'd like to move an alternate motion for the draft council policy 10.6 in relation to elected members' reimbursement of expenses, and move as recommended the draft policy 10.3, elected members' interstate and overseas travel and expenses. The nature of the difference to the first recommended policy, with your permission, Chair, may I read that out?
Certainly, thank you.
Okay, the policy objective is to identify the nature, scope and extent of expenses that elected members are eligible to seek reimbursement for in undertaking their role. The policy statement is the following expenses are reimbursable, subject to application and submission of appropriate supporting documentation. The first one is information and communications technology, an annual allowance based upon the maximum determination of the salaries and allowances tribunal for local government CEOs and elected members, currently $3,500 per annum, will be paid to elected members. Childcare and carer expenses will be paid on the basis of $25 per hour or the actual cost per hour, whichever is the lesser, in attending or performing an authorised function. And I'll get on to authorised functions at the end of the this policy, Chair. Travel and parking expenses. Travel expenses and parking expenses at cost in attending or performing an authorised function. Administration, the CEO is to implement administrative procedures that will facilitate the timely and transparent reimbursement of expenses to elected members, and a record of all elected member reimbursements is to be maintained and published on the city's website. As far as definitions go, an authorised function is an elected member attending or performing a role in an official capacity in the following circumstances: at an ordinary or special meeting of council, at annual and special meetings of electors, at advisory committee meetings, at agenda briefing sessions, workshops and forums, external committees and regional council meetings as an authorised representative, authorised training and development activities, civic receptions and events conducted by the city, as an invited guest at civic receptions or events conducted by an adjoining local government. And this follows with a, because of the expansion of the policy remit from just childcare to include carer, there is a definition of carer as a person required to provide personal care support and assistance to another individual due to a disability, mental condition, including terminal or chronic illness, mental illness, or is frail or aged. And that is a cost incurred. It's not an entitlement, and that source comes from the Carer Recognition Act of 2010. Chair, there has been some discussion, and indeed it was raised at the agenda briefing, as to the reimbursement of travel and parking, childcare and travel expenses for councillors attending the inquiry. Which has been the power inquiry currently being underway. It was the initial intent of the commissioners to include as part of an authorised function to extend to an elected member as a witness at a hearing, inquiry, tribunal or other judicial or quasi-judicial process convened under a written law and in relation to a matter that involves the local government. And what that served to do was not only cover the inquiry but also cover any councillor having to attend any type of tribunal or legal process as a result of their role as an elected member. Advice subsequent to the publication of the agenda suggests that the actual inquiry or the inquirer has the power to provide for reimbursement of expenses, which include childcare, carers costs and parking and travel. Now, that's a fairly moot type of situation, given that the City of Perth will pay for the cost of the inquiry anyway, which I will, which I'm sure will include any reimbursements that are provided for by the inquirer. However, in saying that, administratively, I think it would be a very good idea to seek the seek information from the inquiry panel in the Department of Local Government as to the best administrative process that could be utilised in order for elected members to receive appropriate reimbursement. But in moving this motion, as a footnote to the motion, I propose that the Commissioners support the concept of elected members receiving these type of reimbursements as witness at hearings, etc., so as then that can be forwarded onto the inquiry.
Thank you, Commissioner Hammond. Any comment?
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner Hammond, I just refer to the reimbursement of expenses under dot point as an invited guest at civic reception or event conducted by an adjoining local government. I wonder if that's perhaps more specific than what is a practical implementation of the overall policy, which I do support, and that perhaps we should make it as a guest at a civic reception or event, because there could be an appropriate attendance and event that's not in an adjoining local government. So it's really just making it a little bit more flexible. Could you comment on that, please?
Actually, the intent of that was to cover the invitations that are received from adjoining local authorities when they have functions, and sometimes, or as a general rule, elected members are invited. For example, if the City of Vincent had a some form of Christmas function, perhaps, then they would, as a general rule, invite councillors from the City of Perth. However, in saying that, if the intent was to extend that for councillors who are attending events on the basis that they are invited by anybody other than the local government, yeah, I'm happy with that because it's still quite legitimate activity. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Can I just suggest some wording change?
Yes, and then I'll have a comment.
Sure. As an invited guest at a civic reception or event conducted within an adjoining local government area.
Adjoining as in immediately adjacent.
Yeah, that's
to.
Right. Yeah.
So my suggestion is, in fact, just to take out the adjoining.
Okay.
Because there could still be legitimate attendance. It's just not your, it's not joining council.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to be reasonably flexible on this at the moment because this is going out for public comment.
Yep.
It's not cast in stone. So I hear both sides of the argument and I also note the words within rather than without local government. So I'm interested to see what the public reaction is to this before. So whichever way, if you're picking up and including in your motion Commissioner Hammond, Commissioner McMack's suggestion, that's fine. I support the overall intent of the policy. I believe it should be not only transparent but not ambiguous and clear, and there must be a clear nexus between the expense incurred by the member, councillor that is, and the functions under the Act. And I think that's the, I think, which was basically a broad approach. So on that basis, and as I said, having regard for going out for public comment, which will be of interest to me, I'm happy to support the motion as amended by Commissioner Hammond. I'll put it to the vote.
Just confirm the footnote in relation to the witnesses at inquiries, that as well as endorsing these two policies for the purposes of public consultation, we support the concept of elected members receiving reimbursements for hearings, inquiries, etc., and we seek further advice from the inquiry panel as to the best administrative process in which to achieve same.
My suggestion on that, Commissioner Hammond, is not be a footnote, it'd be an additional recommendation.
Okay, fine.
So
certainly.
Footnotes don't carry much weight with me.
Yeah, I'm happy to commit.
It just means a footnote to a note. So, okay, so are we clear on that? Are you clear on that?
Yeah.
So on that basis, and I fully support the intent behind that proposed footnote, which is now part of the motion. All those in favour? Endorsed? Unanimous? I think there's no previous motions of which... is there any urgent business from any commissioners?
Yes, Chair Commissioner, we do have some items of urgent business. The first item relates to the nomination of a voting delegate to the West Australian Local Government Association Annual General Meeting. So the proposal was that Council appoint Commissioner Lumsden and Commissioner Hammond as its voting delegates at the West Australian Local Government Association Annual General Meeting 2018.
Good. Do I have a mover for that? Commissioner McMath. Seconded Commissioner Hammond.
Could I just suggest that Council McMath be a proxy?
If for whatever reason we can't have one of us can't attend.
I'm very happy for Commissioner McMath to be a proxy.
Thank you, Commissioner Hammond.
If you're in the proximity, okay. Is there any dissent? I'll declare the motion endorsed accordingly.
Excuse me, Chair, there's also another item of urgent business. Similar to the last meeting, I believe, is the attendance at the Mindari Regional Council meeting to be held on 6th of September 2018. So the motion was that the Council notes the apology of the Chair, Commissioner Lumsden, and appoints Commissioner Hammond as Deputy at the Mindari Regional Council meeting to be held on 6th of September 2018.
Good. Well, I think I'd better move that. I'm happy with that motion. Seconder, Commissioner McNair? You're not dissenting to that, I am? Good. Okay, declare the motion endorsed. That's the closure of the meeting. So thank you all for your attendance. Declare the meeting closed. Thank you.